Dr. Coben is an author, columnist, financial planner, and international lecturer. He holds a Ph.D. degree in public policy, M.A. degrees in economics and business economics, and is a graduate of Reformed Bible College. Dr. Coben is an outspoken critic of public schools, government regulation, the IRS, paper money, welfare, and abortion. An evangelical Christian and the father of six homeschooled children, Dr. Coben is applauded by listeners across America and around the world as a champion of liberty, limited government, free markets, and peace. Now let's join Dr. Coben with Christian Worldview.
And we welcome you this morning to Christian Worldview with Dr. John Coben, this 28th day of October 2005. Another great day on tap for us here at the Christian Worldview program. Glad we're making all sorts of progress with our technology. Not as fast as we'd like, but it's still coming along, and so we're glad you're listening to us this morning on the Tyranny Response Network. Well, let's take a quick look at the weather since some of you are still making your way out to work.
Right now in Greenville, Spartanburg, it's 39 degrees. Downtown, 44 degrees. Anderson, 39 degrees. Clemson, 41 degrees. Today, partly cloudy this morning, then clearing. Highs in the lower 60s, northeast winds 5 to 10 miles per hour, and there is a frost advisory in effect for tonight. And here's a quote by Henry Kissinger. Too bad 90% of the politicians give the other 10% a bad reputation.
Okay, very good. And the only events going on this week, as far as I know, are down in Columbia. The League of the South meeting is going to be in Columbia at 10 o'clock. If you have any question about that, look on the South Carolina League of the South. Do a Google search for that and find that and find the webpage for them. And then you'll be able to, Lord willing, quickly find the address and directions to get down there. Starts at 10 o'clock Saturday morning, and that's in Columbia, League of the South meeting. Where do I find out about all the events that go on in the upstate? Well, I go to tyrannyresponse.com or tyrannyresponse.net. At those websites, you're going to be able to see, or it's actually the same website, you'll be able to see a calendar right at the bottom of the page. And on that calendar, it'll have all the meetings listed, as well as above it, the various directions and so forth you'll need to be able to get to each of those events. So, Glad to provide that service for you there from the Tyranny Response Network. It's important for those of you who are political junkies or those who are Christian activists and want to know what's going on here in the upstate. Of course, last night there was a meeting of the Greenville County taxpayers as well as the Constitution Party, and Lord willing, those meetings went well. Today we have our informal TRN get-together, which is in the afternoon. We're looking forward to meeting with people this afternoon, as we usually do, for about 1:30 or 1:40, and we'll be there usually till about 4 o'clock, and that's at the China Walk Buffet. If you're able to make it, by all means, join us. We'll be glad to see you there. Look forward to talking with you then. All right, well, in the news, of course, Harriet Myers pulled her resignation or her appointment out. She didn't want to do it. Then after people hated her so much and called her a liberal and knew she was a liberal and so forth. So that's good. That's interesting to see. Of course, now what's going to be more interesting to see is who G.W. Bush decides to appoint in her stead. So interesting thought there. There could be more serious things coming down, however, as we see that Libby is to be indicted for making false statements today. Roe is to be spared for now, and the grand jury's term is to be extended. There's still a lot going on here, and we may even see the president himself indicted. I just can't imagine he wouldn't squirm out of it somehow, though, if that were the case. But a lot of stuff going on there, and of course we have a lot of corruption in the Republican Party right now. Delay is only one example of corruption. And I'm not saying the Democrats are without corruption, by the way. As far as I can tell, they do the same thing. But here's what Fox News reports. Libby to be charged with in CIA leak probe. White House officials today, Friday morning, embraced the possibility that Vice President Dick Cheney's top aide, I. Lewis Scooter Libby, would be indicted in the CIA leak case, but held out hope presidential confidant Karl Rove might escape charges for the time being. Well, if he held out hope, look, if the guy did it, if he's guilty of treason or whatever else, then he's going to be indicted. What do you mean they hold out hope? Well, we want to make sure that we're going to hope that he doesn't get indicted here, even though he's guilty. It's probably because they're all guilty, folks. So, anyway, special counsel Patrick Fitzgerald signaled Thursday he might simply keep Roe under investigation. According to a person familiar with recent developments in the case, he requested anonymity because of its sensitivity. That would spare Roe bad news Friday when the grand jury has heard the case for 2 years is set to expire. Speculation flew across Washington early Friday about who, if anyone, would be indicted regarding exposure of covert CIA officer Valerie Plame. The White House, Cheney arrived at 6:25 a.m., more than an hour earlier than usual. His chief of staff, Libby, was leaving home about 6:15 then, his normal commuting time. Roe attended the daily meeting of the senior staff meeting and met with the president late in the late evening. At the end of the day in which the White House dealt with the withdrawal of Supreme Court nominee Harriet Myers, Cheney's top aide was said to have passed up the staff meeting to attend a security briefing. All right. So that'll be something else to keep watching as we go along here. Well, what else is happening in Fox News today? Anything? Well, before I go on with anything else, we should remind you of our phone numbers. That's right, the phone numbers, 864-244-8177. That's 864-244-9904 if you want the main studio line. And you have, as well, 864-201-6955. Those are all important pieces of information because we'd love to hear from you as you want to interact with folks here at the Tyranny Response Network, specifically yours truly, Dr. John Coben, on the at the Christian Worldview Show. Well, here's an article sent to us by, and by the way, folks, my email does not seem to be working today. So I don't know why, but if you want to email your questions in, I probably won't get them till tomorrow. Just so you know, doesn't seem to be working here. Don't know why. Ask a technological guru. I'm not one who could tell you and answer that, except that it just doesn't work. Well, the Advocates for Self-Government published this article that Brian Morton sent in. It's entitled, Must a Christian Be a Libertarian? And it's by Clifford F. Theis, T-H-I-E-S. Clifford F. Theis. Must a Christian be a Libertarian? Well, that's an interesting question. 9 years ago, my daughter Adele and I were driving from my home, then in Maryland, to the home of my sister-in-law, Christine Fishbeck, in West Virginia, where we were going to have a 4th of July party. This party was something of an annual event for area libertarians. As Adele and I were crossing the Potomac River, my daughter noticed that Maryland State Police were stopping cars going the opposite direction. She asked me what was happening. I realized the state police were searching for fireworks, which were illegal just across the border, in Virginia and West Virginia, but were not illegal in Maryland. I told this to Adele. She asked, why aren't fireworks legal in Maryland? I replied, because the state of Maryland doesn't want people to celebrate Independence Day. This isn't the way they see it in Maryland. To them, it's okay to celebrate the 4th of July as long as you do it in a safe and legal way. Of course, if the Patriots had stayed safe and legal, we'd have nothing to celebrate on the 4th. Among libertarians, it's traditional to share how and when you discovered you were a libertarian. My own awareness goes back quite a few years, but the occasion of Adele's birth reinvigorated a political activism that had become dormant during my years in the military. I had always thought of myself as a big and strong man, able to take care of myself in our often violent and unjust world, but Adele, when she was born, was so small and innocent, she deserved better than what I got. This reminded me that I deserved better too, that we deserved better, so I got back involved with politics. My choices regarding political activity weren't ideal. Romans 13 says that government is established by God to be a terror to evil and praise to those who do good. This is a clear endorsement of limited government, one that uses a coercive force only to prosecute evildoers, a government that only uses encouragement to promote good doing. The Libertarian Party comes close to, but misses the mark set out by Romans 13 because it declares itself neutral on moral issues. Okay, this is where this is a huge mistake. I'm going to interject and stop here. This is my opinion where people go really awry in understanding Romans 13. You see, folks, there is no way that the words good and evil there referred to Nero in that first century. That's who they're writing to. Nero and Herod were not terrors to good works. They simply were not terrors to good works. That's all you can say about it. They were not terrors to good works. And they were not those who were praising those who did well. So either the theonomic perspective is right, which says this didn't apply, it didn't refer to the Roman emperor at the time, it only applied and referred to an idealized state, wherever that idealized state may be, or you know, possibly the nature of the government, limited government in the post-millennial golden age, or the liberty of conscience perspective, my perspective, is correct. And that says that the words good and evil there do not mean refer to what God defines as good and evil. In fact, they refer instead to what the dictator or the king or the Caesar or whoever it is refers to as good and evil. Those, and once you look at it that way, then you don't run into the problem that this this fellow is running into with how in the world could this be the case? I mean, obviously they're not doing this, so this is not truly a limited government. No, it's not what the scripture is saying. Scripture does not talk about limited government anywhere in that sense. What the scripture is talking about is normally, when it comes to government, is kings, and that's not a limited government. That's an all-powerful government. That's what it's referring to. Now, listen to what we've done this several times before, but I love to do it, so we'll do it again. In fact, it's going to be right at the beginning of the introduction of my my new book, The Theology of Christian Policy, Public Policy, Highlighting the American Experience. Listen to what it says here. Let every soul be subject to Nero and Herod. This is how they would have heard it the first century. All right, if you're reading this book, unless you believe it has to do with an idealized state in the future millennial age, it doesn't say that in the text here, but unless you're reading that into it or assuming that's what it's talking about, as Greg Bonson does, then you have to read it as they would have read it. Governing authorities needs to be replaced with people's names like Nero and Herod. We all know about how evil Nero was, violator of God's commands and word in every respect, and Herod, what he did, you know, all the different Herods, and what they did, the evils that they inflicted upon people, including killing all the children under 2 years old in Bethlehem, as you recall. Let every soul, Romans 13:1, be subject to Nero and Herod, for there is no authority except from God, and Nero and Herod are appointed by God. Therefore, whoever resists Nero and Herod resist the ordinance of God, and those who resist Nero and Herod will bring judgment on themselves. For Nero and Herod are not a terror to good works, but to evil. Do you want to be unafraid of Nero and Herod? Do what is good, and you will have praise from the same. For Nero and Herod are God's ministers to you for good. But if you do evil, be afraid, for Nero and Herod do not bear the sword in vain. For Nero and Herod are God's ministers, avengers to execute wrath on him who practices evil. Doesn't make any sense when you read it that way. Unless the theonomic position is right, and this is just a theological abstraction, it doesn't make sense to understand this passage saying that government, the state, is there to punish people who do evil and reward those who do well. So this is where the guy goes astray here. He says, Romans 13, because it declares itself, the Libertarian Party comes close to but misses the mark set out by Romans 13 because it declares itself neutral on moral issues. This is false. Romans 13 does not declare that the state upholds the law of God. That's what I'm going to tell you. The state does not do that. You cannot find states in history that have done that. Just the opposite occurs. Oh, but Dr. Coben, they try well. They're well-meaning. Some of them are well-intentioned. They just are fallible human beings, like the church. Church is full of failure. No, folks. The things that are supposedly institutions of God at least have to somewhat resemble God and His ways. The church does. You know, I mean, we have baptisms, communions, we have preaching, we have prayer, we have worship and through singing. You know, we have the Word of God as central. And sure, there are failures. But by and large, you can tell it's the church. The state has virtually nothing to do with upholding the righteousness of God, and never has. Very rarely in history do we find even a limited government, and much less a state, which has upheld things that are righteous. So folks, there's no way, unless you're going to start calling the Mormon Church and the Roman Catholic Church and Islam the same, like George Bush does, the same same thing as Christianity, just with, you know, imperfect and if, you know, men with foibles who are running it, then you can't say the state is a godly institution like that for promoting the word, for promoting the ways of God in the world. All right, we're overdue for a break. You're listening to Christian Worldview with Dr. John Coben. We'll be back in just a minute.
If you have a question or comment for the show, please dial 864-244-9904, 864-244-8177, or 864-201-6955. Calls are received 7:30 a.m. to 9 o'clock a.m. weekday mornings. If you are listening at any other time, you are listening to a recording. You may also email your questions or comments to questions@policyofliberty.net.
Hi, this is Dr. John Coben. Is it okay for a Christian to become wealthy? Did you know that 8 out of 10 Americans will face retirement with little or no savings, even Americans who had good incomes? At Integrity Group, we are dedicated to providing personalized service, finding effective ways to protect and increase your hard-earned money. Integrity Group is an independent financial planning firm that offers a wide range of services. We specialize in finding creative, custom solutions to meet the needs of each individual. Do you have concerns about providing for your retirement? Do you want to ensure that catastrophes like disability or long-term care will not wipe out your savings? Do you need to have your assets protected from creditors? Do you want tax-advantaged growth of your savings? At Integrity Group, we recognize that time passes all too quickly. Sound financial planning is not something to be delayed. Our offices are located at 514 Pettigrew Street in downtown Greenville. Make an appointment with Integrity Group today at 864-244-6464. That's 864-244-6464.
A patriot must always be ready to defend his country against his government. Edward Abbey.
The Patriot Network is a national federation of local clubs devoted to bringing relief to the oppressed American taxpayer. It is based right here in the South Carolina Upcountry and chaired by Dr. John Coben's associate, legendary freedom warrior Robert Clarkson. Visit our website at patriotnetwork.info for full contact information, meeting times, and locations around the South and beyond. That's Patriot Network, one word, .info. There you can also sample many action reports, current and past issues of our newsletter, and mainstream news features about IRS rot, corruption, and incompetence. Find out what our decades-old organization may be able to do to put a stop to your IRS problems. PatriotNetwork.info commends Dr. John Coben on the founding of the Tyranny Response Network and his unique Christian worldview show, heard weekday mornings right here on TRN.
You are listening to TRN, the Tyranny Response Network, 97.7 FM in Greenville, 87.9 FM in Spartanburg and Liberty, and 96.5 FM in Piedmont.
You're listening to TRN, the Tyranny Response Network, where we comfort the afflicted and afflict the comfortable.
And we welcome you back to Christian Worldview with Dr. John Coben. And just since we're reading about the libertarian issue, are you tired of politicians who raise taxes, invade your privacy, and assume that you do not have the sense to make your own decisions? Try voting libertarian for a change. Would you like to meet other libertarians? You'll find they are regular people like you, concerned about the state of our republic, and are willing to act on that concern. Our business meeting is at 6:30 p.m. the second Thursday of the month at the library on Malden Road between the Old Stadium and Lawrence Road. Visitors are welcome. To talk politics, join us for the Libertarian Underground at 8 p.m. on the fourth Wednesday of the month. It's at Cafe Underground, just off of Main Street downtown. We would love to swap ideas with you for restoring limited constitutional government. And that same meeting, or similar meeting, I should say, occurs as the Liberty of Plenty meeting in Spartanburg. And that's the first Tuesday of the month at 6:30 p.m. at the world-famous Beacon Drive-In. So either way, hope you can attend. That'll be just next week, won't it? Next Tuesday will be, the first Tuesday of the month. So attend that meeting coming up in Spartanburg if you can. Thank you for supporting the Libertarian Party and Christian Worldview on the Tyranny Response Network. Okay, well, we've been reading this article by Clifford Theis, Must a Christian Be a Libertarian? And Theis makes a slip-up, in my estimation, by saying that Romans 13 is established by God to be a terror to evil and praise to those who do good, and he's defining that evil and good is defined as by God's standard. In other words, the state is there, according to Romans 13, to provide good and reward to those who are Christians and those who do well, and to be a terror to those who are murderers, thieves, and so forth, stuff like that. Just the opposite is the truth in general. And although our history does not cause us to redefine the scriptures, what we see is that we don't need to even consider it such a way, because Nero was in charge of Rome at the time when Paul wrote. Nero, And this is a guy who murdered his own mother. This is a guy who was a blasphemer, an idolater, an adulterer. This is a man who obviously broke the Sabbath, took the name of the Lord in vain, and was covetous. This guy was not a Christian, and certainly in his own life did not uphold in any way, shape, or form that which is good. This idea, this divine right idea that, government, they're failed, imperfect men who try their best. No, it wasn't. This guy had no semblance, Nero, neither Nero nor Herod nor any ruler for that matter, but especially those two at that time, had no semblance of Christian commitment or commitment to God. They were a terror to those who did what God thinks is good, and they rewarded those people who God thinks are evil. That's the fact of the matter. And the words good and evil in the passage refer not to the good and evil as defined by God, but the good and evil as defined by Caesar or whoever else is in charge. So anyway, this is a problem with Thea's argument in my estimation. So he's talking about Romans 13 stating incorrectly. He says that Romans 13 refers to the government having to uphold the law of God effectively and tell people what is right and wrong and punish those who God thinks are evil and reward those who God thinks are good. State doesn't do that well. The Libertarian Party is bad because it does not promote morality in society. It just declares itself neutral on moral issues. Why does the Libertarian Party do that? As Libertarians, we do not trust the state. We do not believe the state is intrinsically good, or the state can do anything good for society. As a matter of fact, with proactive policies, we have more dilapidation of the environment, more destruction of property, more injury to human rights than anything else, any other institution can do. And therefore, the Libertarians do not trust the state to be in charge of any kind of moral behavior at all. And it's through this misunderstanding of Romans 13 that other people go astray and try to get the state to enforce moral behavior. Now, I understand it's the plain reading. If you're reading Romans 13, yeah, it seems plainly to be the case, doesn't it? Yeah, it's a terror, not a terror to good works, but to evil, blah, blah. Folks, and if we just read the scriptures as I just did, as the first century Christians would have read it, it becomes very clear. Not only that, there are some changes even in the Greek. A weaker word for the word evil is used. Instead of poneros, which is used in most of chapter 12, the word is switched to kakon, which is a much more general word, can mean wickedness or evil like poneros does in chapter 12, but could also be as benign as something like misdeeds or something that's bad behavior. So government decides what it considers are misdeeds, bad behavior in my estimation, and it thrusts that upon the citizens. And if you don't obey it, it punishes you. And Paul's telling you that. And it should be pretty obvious. And he's writing that why in Romans 13? Well, because that's where those people lived, in the seat of government. Why does Peter write it in first? Well, those people were all expelled from Rome by Nero, banished for being Christians. Why does it occur in Titus 3:1? Because Titus was in Crete, and Gortys was the provincial capital. So he mentions it there. People that have to come and face to face with the state, he writes to, and tells them just to be passively submissive to these people. Don't cause a big deal in life. Don't stir up trouble for yourselves or for other folks. Bring glory to God. No, don't get sidetracked from your main purpose. If they compel you to give some tax, give it to them. Doesn't say to go out and scour the books and find out what tax you might owe on your 1040 form and fill it out. Doesn't say that. Says if they're in your face, got a stick over your head or a gun to your head, pay the money. It isn't worth it. Just like when Jesus was confronted by those who collect the temple tax, because Peter said, "Of course, my master pays the temple tax." Of course, Jesus said, "Look, lest we offend them." That's the reason. It's not because he didn't know he owed the temple tax. He just didn't want to offend these brutes and these thugs. Lest we offend them, go cast the hook into the water and pull up the first fish that comes up and grab the coin out of its mouth and go pay that to them for you and for me. That's the fact of the matter. It's not because we're worried about obeying the tax code that we pay the tax. It's because we're threatened by an unruly, nasty state, and we want to comply only because we don't want to be harassed by these people. We don't want to be worried about what they might do to us. That's why you're paying it, folks. That's it. Okay, anyway, I'm going to go back to this article now and see where he's going with this. It's, again, Must a Christian Be a Libertarian by Clifford Theas. Libertarian Party comes close to but misses the mark set out by Romans 13 because it declares itself neutral on moral issues. Wrong. Right about the Libertarian Party, wrong about Romans 13. First of all, moral neutrality is simply impossible. Government officials in their words and in the example of their lives inevitably display what behavior is exemplary and what behavior is, by contrast, unacceptable. There's a difference between not using the coercive powers of the state to force people to be moral and using one's legitimate economic and social abilities to try to persuade others to be moral. Indeed, if saying that the Libertarian Party does not take positions on moral issues, it should affirm that virtue is only possible in a free society, and that a free society best induces virtuous behavior, and that the candidates of the Libertarian Party will, if elected, promote virtue through non-coercive means. Okay, now this is a different matter. As long as you're not promoting morality through coercion, there is no problem with promoting virtue through a limited government. We're not talking about anything, fulfilling the commands of Romans 13 here or something like that. Misapplied areas of scripture like that. What he's saying is, if you encourage people to do non-coercive means to support this, support virtue in society, that's a good thing, and it is. And you can do that by having preachers go out and persuade men. That's how moral issues get resolved, in the pulpit. People witnessing to other folks. That's it. Around Thanksgiving dinner with your family and your mother nagging you. Those are ways, with social pressure, in which moral issues are encouraged and virtue is encouraged in society, not from the state. So I don't understand why he's even talking about the state here. What we really need is a limited government that has nothing to do, as the libertarians say, a very limited government with nothing to do with moral virtue in society at all. And he's right about a free society promoting the most virtuous behavior, but I think he's getting a little confused here on the state issue. Let me read a little bit more, then we're going to take a break. And just as government officials are to encourage good through personal example and praise, we as members of society in our roles as parents and teachers and as employers and landlords and friends and benefactors and all our private relations with others, we too are to encourage moral behavior. Because we are commanded to love one another, we cannot be morally neutral. But because we respect the limits of our authority and we must trust God's plan of salvation, we do not violently intervene into the lives of others. All that is true. Has nothing. I don't know why I even put the first statement up there about government officials aren't encouraged good doing. This is not what the scripture is teaching there. They encourage what they think is good, not what God thinks is good. He's just misunderstanding the passage, folks. Otherwise, he has it just right. Anyway, you are listening to Christian Worldview with Dr. John Coben, and we'll be back in just a minute.
If you have a question or comment for the show, please dial 864-244-9904, 864-244-8177, or 864-201-6955. Calls are received 7:30 a.m. to 9 o'clock a.m. weekday mornings. If you are listening at any other time, you are listening to a recording. You may also email your questions or comments to questions@policyofliberty.net.
The Bill of Rights, the first 10 amendments of the American Constitution. Amendment 1. Congress shall make no law respecting an establishment of religion, or prohibiting the free exercise thereof, or abridging the freedoms of speech, or of the press, or of the right of the people peaceably to assemble, and to petition the government for a redress of grievances. Amendment 2. A well-regulated militia, being necessary to the security of a free state, the right of the people to keep and bear arms, shall not be infringed. Amendment 3. No soldier shall, in time of peace, be quartered in any house without the consent of the owner, nor in time of war, but in a manner to be prescribed by law. Amendment 4. The right of the people to be secure in their persons, houses, papers, and effects against unreasonable searches and seizures shall not be violated, and no warrants shall issue, but upon probable cause, supported by oath or affirmation, and particularly describing the place to be searched and the persons or things to be seized. Amendment 5.
No person shall be held to answer for a capital or otherwise infamous crime unless on presentment or indictment of a grand jury, except in cases arising in the land or naval forces, or in the militia, when in actual service in time of war or public danger. Nor shall any person be subject to the same offense to be twice put in jeopardy of life or limb, nor shall be compelled in any criminal case to be a witness against himself, nor be deprived of life, liberty, or property without due process of law, nor shall private property be taken for public use without just compensation. Amendment 6. In all criminal prosecutions, the accused shall enjoy the right to a speedy and public trial by an impartial jury of the state and district wherein the crime shall have been committed, which district shall have been previously ascertained by law, and to be informed of the nature and cause of the accusation, to be confronted with the witnesses against him, to have compulsory process for obtaining witnesses in his favor, and to have the assistance of counsel for his defense. Amendment 7. In suits at common law, where the value in controversy shall exceed $20, the right of trial by jury shall be preserved, and no fact tried by a jury shall be otherwise re-examined in any court of the United States than according to the rules of the common law. Amendment 8. Excessive bail shall not be required, nor excessive fines imposed, nor cruel and unusual punishments inflicted. Amendment 9. The enumeration in the Constitution of certain rights shall not be construed to deny or disparage others retained by the people. Amendment 10. The powers not delegated to the United States by the Constitution, nor prohibited by it to the states, are reserved to the states respectively, or to the people.
Government is the great fiction through which everybody endeavors to live at the expense of everybody else. Frederick Bastiat.
Liberalism is not to be tossed lightly aside, but to be hurled with great force.
And we welcome you back to Christian Worldview with Dr. John Coben. This 28th day of October, 2005. Let's have a look at the weather.
Right now in Greenville, Spartanburg, it's 43 degrees, downtown 44 degrees, Anderson 41 degrees, Clemson 40 degrees. Today, partly cloudy this morning, then clearing. Highs in the lower 60s, northeast winds 5 to 10 miles per hour. And there is a frost advisory in effect for tonight. And I don't have a quote to read right now. Here's one by Thomas Jefferson. A little rebellion now and then is a good thing.
Indeed, it is a good thing. And the Times, speaking of good things, the Times Examiner is the independent conservative voice of the Palmetto State. If you're tired of reading liberal columnists, the Times Examiner features outstanding true conservative and libertarian columnists. And the Times Examiner supports home and Christian schooling, limited government, free markets, private property rights, gun ownership, Christian values, and our great Southern heritage. You can pick up a copy of the Times Examiner at newsstands around Greenville, or you can get a full year subscription for only $25 in-state and $27 out-of-state. Call 864-268-0576 to start your subscription. That's 864-268-0576. Or if you want to place an ad in the Times Examiner, it's inexpensive and it's well worth doing for your business. Help the paper and help your business. 864-859-6817. Ask for David specifically when you call. 864-859-6817. All right, well, welcome back to the show here. We already have a caller, and I believe it's Chuck on the line, and we'd like to welcome you to the show today, Chuck.
Hey, good morning. Beautiful morning in the Palmetto State today.
It sure is.
Interesting article. I think he's done a pretty good job of characterizing the Libertarian Party. I've been a Libertarian for quite a while, and I agree with him, and I agree with you that he's missed it on the proper role of the state.
Yeah. Yeah, it's unfortunate. He really did blow it on that. But a lot of people do. I mean, they don't understand, they don't get their theology straight. They simply read the text. You know who did this that really annoyed me a lot was Ludwig von Mises, who was not a Christian, he was an atheist, but he quotes Paul in Romans 13 in Human Action, and I think it's in Theory and History, and just blasts the Bible for being anti-libertarian, anti-free market, not understanding economics, and blah, 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 not being, totally being ignorant of history. And it's all because even he, like many others, take a naive understanding that somehow Paul believed, or Peter believed, that Nero was upholding the law of God, or even imperfectly trying to uphold the law of God. And this is not what the scriptures teach. And that's where this fellow theist goes up for it. Do you know who this theist guy is?
No, I don't.
Okay. I don't either, that's why I just asked him.
Okay. Well, you know, I like the distinction that the Cato Institute makes. They're not really affiliated with the Libertarian Party. In fact, they seem to studiously avoid mentioning... They'll talk a lot more about Republicans and Democrats than they've mentioned the Libertarian Party. And that's fine. What they're about is policy.
Right.
And they like to make the distinction between political society and civil society. And it's very interesting how often, you know, you can compare, and that's what they do. They'll compare a solution to a particular problem by civil society and political society. And political society almost always comes up short.
Yes.
Because it's coercive, it's inefficient, and, you know, all those problems that go with it where you look at like the New Orleans disaster, the private parties were getting together and doing some great relief work, and FEMA was just making a big mess of it.
Yes, absolutely.
And that's typical.
Yes, it really is typical. And they do make a good distinction there. That's similar to the Albert J. Knox earlier distinction that you have social power and you have state power. State power accomplishes nothing but to pad the pockets of the corruptors, the parasite, to increase the growth of the malignant tumor of the state, and does virtually nothing to help society in general, although obviously certain individuals and corporations are benefited by state power. It is not a social institution that encourages cooperation. It's one that encourages defeat and misery in society, not the other way around, and people just don't realize that.
Yeah, and it's kind of discouraging sometimes when you hear, particularly in the mainstream media, any new problem comes up, they immediately look to government for the solution. It's become a real reflex.
Right. It sure is. And we talked about this before, but when you have bureaucrats, wherever they may be, and even somebody that we would generally like police officers, people who are there to preserve peace, supposedly, in society, you know, they too are going to have very little incentive to eliminate crime. Why? Well, because if they eliminate crime, they eliminate their jobs. And people do think about primarily their own self-interest more than they think about the public interest. That's a hard thing for people to accept. They believe that somehow somebody gets elected or hired or appointed, they change from being a self-interested actor into a publicly spirited person who's willing to even lose his job and his life for the sake of society. No, I mean, most of these people, as we've witnessed many people even fled in New Orleans after the flood. Most people who, and almost all people, as far as I know in life, maximize their self-interest and you're not able to subordinate it to the public interest. And that's why politicians or bureaucrats will always fail. That's one of the main key reasons. But even somebody like the police, they too have no incentive to eliminate crime. And I remember speaking to one police chief some years ago, and he said, you know, we don't want to eliminate crime, John. We just want to control it. And that's a huge distinction. I appreciate his honesty. That he doesn't want to eliminate crime. He wants to control it, because by eliminating it, he eliminates his job, people's need for him. If he controls crime, then people constantly see that he's doing an effective job at controlling it, and that he's still needed on the job. So, and that's the incentives. That's how incentives work. That's what economics tells you is going to happen. We end up having a controlled situation, whether eliminating a bad thing in society.
I tell you what, that came through loud and clear. I noticed the other day you read my review of the book, Confessions of a Tax Collector.
Yeah.
By Richard Yancey. And boy, I mean, that place was just full of self-interested actors. Very few pretended to even have, you know, an intrinsic interest in what they were doing. They're there to make money. They're there because the IRS would pay more for similar work than they could get somewhere else. And they're there for advancement.
Yeah.
It was just loud and clear. I'm here for what I can get out of it.
Well, a lot of people, I mean, some folks have not been to college probably who are hearing this morning, but when you graduate from college, you know, you usually go to these job fairs they have on campus. And, you know, right in line, there's going to be, say it's in, you're in accounting, for instance, you brought up the IRS, you're going to have, you know, Arthur Anderson or whatever they're called now, Pete Marwick and all the other big eight firms all lined up there waiting to talk to you. And at the end of the row, you're going to have the CIA and the IRS. They're there trying to recruit people. And what do they recruit them with? Well, we got great benefits, job security, your salary's not as good as the other, but if you get some experience here, you can probably go to some of these other firms. If you can't get a job at one of those places, come on down here. And what happens? People who can't get a job in the private sector where the pay is good and the potential for promotion is good, go and work for the IRS or for the CIA or something like that, and then they get some experience and then get out. But their whole purpose of being there is not because, oh, look, there's the IRS booth or the CIA booth. You know, I'm going to subordinate my own desire for gain economically or for promoting my own life. I'm going to go over there because I want to serve the United States of America and be a good government agent. And it just doesn't happen, folks. I mean, this is a rare, rare thing, if at all. People are presented with economic alternatives, and they choose the best one that will maximize their own self-interest, their own economic gain, and that's what they do when they work for the state.
Well, that's absolutely true. By the way, I saw something that confirmed one of your Liberty Minutes. You had one where you were talking about the lottery being the best tax.
Oh, yeah.
And the Greenville Journal today reports that the lottery is alive and well. Apparently, they were concerned that with the high gas prices, that people wouldn't have enough money left over to play the lottery. But they say it's doing just fine.
Yeah, well, that's going to happen. I mean, it's just like beer and cigarettes. You know, even during depressions, those sales did very, very well because people always need to be entertained with something, and especially when entertainment is cheap. Video stores, cigarette sales, movie theaters, those are always going to have sales, and lottery tickets are not going to be any different because people are always looking for some way they can spend a little bit of what they took on for entertainment. So appreciate you bringing that up, though, and I do think the lottery, as you know, is the best way to fund government. Because it's a voluntary tax, there's no extortion involved, and the wealth of the sinner is stored up for the righteous. You don't have to pay it if you don't want. And, I don't play the lottery, but if someone else does, fine with me. Just money going in that can be useful, and people run to pay it. It's amazing how fast they run. They just rush down there. I want to give money to the government. Okay, go for it. Anyway, well, I appreciate you bringing that up, though, Chuck, because that's a real bugaboo. It's a bone of contention with some listeners, I know, but I think it's pretty clear. And there's an article and an audio file online on Liberty, on policyofliberty.net under the article section, as well as on tyrannyresponse.com. You can find out information about that particular piece that Chuck mentioned.
Well, great. Yeah, it was interesting. I tell you, I'm real intrigued, too, by some of these alternative tax policies that have been floated, the fair tax, and then this week Jim DeMint's proposal to have sort of a value-added tax. There's one piece in there that I'm real concerned about that just rubs me the wrong way entirely, and that's with both these policies, they're proposing to have refunds come in the mail.
Mm.
So, yeah, it's more government intrusion.
Right.
And you got to register, and it's going to be, well, you're familiar already with the earned income tax credit.
Right.
So they do tax expenditures through the code through some of these tricky measures, and that'll just keep that kind of stuff going.
Yeah.
I'd be a lot happier with a total disconnect.
Yeah, and that's not what they're going to give us, of course. They're going to want something in return if they give up such a big, meaty piece. Even Jim DeMint's not going to go that far, but it'll be interesting for us to watch. But I tell you what, Chuck, we've come up against our break time already, believe it or not. Really appreciate the phone call this morning, though.
Okay, yeah, it's been great. You have a good day.
All right, talk to you soon. Thanks a lot, Chuck. All right, you are listening to Christian Worldview with Dr. John Coben, and it's our 8:15 break already. Good phone call from Chuck. Good article reading so far. We'll continue reading this article when we get back on Christian Worldview with Dr. John Coben.
If you have a question or comment for the show, please dial 864-244-9904, 864-244-8177, or 864-201-6955. Calls are received 7:30 a.m. to 9 o'clock a.m. weekday mornings. If you are listening at any other time, you are listening to a recording. You may also email your questions or comments to questions@policyofliberty.net.
Sick of having the dead flies of bad public policy stink up the ointment of American liberty? The follies and foibles of the political sages of our day are plucked out daily on Christian Worldview with Dr. John Coben, weekday mornings from 7:30 to 9 o'clock, right here on 97.7 FM in Greenville.
This is Dr. John Coben from Christian Worldview. You know, a lot of my listeners call and ask me about allodial land titles, covenant marriage, and other topics of importance to Christians who love liberty. Many of these things I've written about at the policyofliberty.net bookstore called Alertness Books. We invite you to visit the Alertness Books bookstore today and pick up the materials that will help you learn the truth and be free.
The inherent vice of capitalism is the unequal sharing of the blessings. The inherent blessing of socialism is the equal sharing of misery. Winston Churchill.
Hi, this is Dr. John Coben. Is it okay for a Christian to become wealthy? Did you know that 8 out of 10 Americans will face retirement with little or no savings, even Americans who had good incomes? At Integrity Group, we are dedicated to providing personalized service, finding effective ways to protect and increase your hard-earned money. Integrity Group is an independent financial planning firm that offers a wide range of services. We specialize in finding creative, custom solutions to meet the needs of each individual. Do you have concerns about providing for your retirement? Do you want to ensure that catastrophes like disability or long-term care will not wipe out your savings? Do you need to have your assets protected from creditors? Do you want tax-advantaged growth of your savings? At Integrity Group, we recognize that time passes all too quickly. Sound financial planning is not something to be delayed. Our offices are located at 514 Pettigrew Street in downtown Greenville. Make an appointment with Integrity Group today at 864-244-6464. That's 864-244-6464.
You're listening to TRN, the Tyranny Response Network. It's roughage for your brain.
And we're trying to provide that roughage for your brain this morning. Remember, the Tyranny Response Network is a volunteer organization, and we need volunteers now. So if you want to give Chuck a call at 271-6761 and let him know you're able and willing to volunteer, then that would be wonderful. We would like to hear from you. You can also go to the tyrannyresponse.net or tyrannyresponse.com website. Under the contacts tab, there are a number of email addresses there. Just email somebody if you're able to help. We're looking for people just to work for an hour or two a month. Not a whole lot of time commitment for a show so and a station so dedicated to liberty. We need people who are willing to be substitute producers for this show, the Christian Worldview Show, and actually run the mixing board and so forth. We need other people who are able to set up computer networkings and to tack up antennas or do things like that around the upstate. If you're able to help at all with those kinds of activities, please do give us a call. We also need people to help fundraising and people who are able to help just promoting the TRN idea. And if you're able to do that for an hour or two a month, not a whole lot of time, but it sure goes a long way towards influencing folks for liberty here in the upstate. Make sure you take advantage of that opportunity by helping out the Tyranny Response Network today. Well, we've been reading this very, very interesting article by Mr. Theus. It's called Must a Christian Be a Libertarian by Clifford F. Theus, technically. And we're going to continue to read a little bit more about this and comment on it, since I think it's an interesting topic for our show today, and I'm sure you do as well. There's another problem with libertarianism, he says. This isn't a problem with the Libertarian Party or with what we understand to be the meaning of the word libertarianism. It's the problem with a connotation that some other people ascribe to the word. The problem is that for some other people, libertarianism implies irresponsible freedom. Some people think libertarianism means a devil-may-care attitude. Eat, drink, and be merry, and for tomorrow we die, and in the long run, we're all dead. For some of these people, this irresponsible freedom means that each person is to be immunized from the consequences of his decisions. This view leads to all kinds of interventions, to redistribution of the wealth, for example, and so that those who make poor choices do not suffer as a consequence of their poor choices. When you think about it, it's exactly the opposite of libertarianism as understood by the Libertarian Party. The Libertarian Party is absolutely against a redistribution of the wealth. Indeed, the Libertarian Party has worked to remove connotation of irresponsible freedom from the word libertarianism. But to some extent, the connotation is still there, and we have to continue to rehabilitate the word. To the Christian, the world is so arranged as to bring about to bring each person to salvation. Realizing the consequences of one's choices is viewed as a part of this process, as an education. Hopefully, a person making poor choices by suffering the consequences will come to be motivated to change. We call this kind of motivation fear of damnation. A person who turns away from bad choices and starts to make good choices will see that good choices lead to benefits, a step up to being motivated by promise of reward. Ultimately, we hope that the person will step up to being motivated by love of God. But some people mistakenly think that libertarians want to cut short this educational process. For example, the libertarians would want to redistribute wealth. That libertarians would want to redistribute wealth, so people who are poor, who make poor decisions, don't suffer the consequence. But why should sinners repent if there is no punishment for poor decisions and no reward for good decisions? The most pure motivation is love of God. A martyr accepts torture and death because of love of God, but few people start out with this motivation. They need reward and punishment. And besides, how do we know what God's will is unless we observe the feedback we receive? If God's will is to be revealed to us through the laws of nature and history, it is wrong for government to try to protect us from and thus undermine the laws of nature and history. Tradition can be and often is a good source of knowledge about what is most conducive to human happiness, and it is altogether proper for us to transmit the values we have just received from the past and further develop ourselves to the next generation. But also it is good for the members of the next generation to question these values, to test them out, and ultimately to adopt them for themselves, not because we taught them, but because they choose them. The Greek philosopher Aristotle described this phenomenon as human flourishing, and Thomas Jefferson described it as the pursuit of happiness. As long as the government keeps the peace, which is its legitimate function, we will choose virtue. We don't need the government to uphold our moral behavior. That which works doesn't need to be subsidized. And that is, I'm interjecting here, that is correct. I think he's absolutely right on all this stuff. This section, since he's got away from his theological exegetical problem, has been excellent. He's done a great job. We might actually, I should say, we will make mistakes, but as long as we suffer or benefit from our choices, then we will come to discover what is consistent with human happiness. Alanis Morissette put the idea this way: you live, you learn, you laugh, you learn, you cry, you learn. This is the first story found in the Bible, Adam and Eve in the garden, choosing between the tree of life and the tree of knowledge. Some people think it was unfair. What was God thinking? Didn't he know that man would make the wrong decision? Was giving man free will some kind of cosmic April Fool's Day? No, it wasn't. It was part of God's plan of salvation. God made man in his image. He made us moral creatures with a godlike power to choose between right and wrong. Thus, the Old Testament describes his relation to us at the passage, "Deep calleth unto deep," and Jesus once responded to a question concerning his own divinity, "Is it not written that we are all little g gods?" But how, and that's quoting from the Psalms, by the way, but how can we beneficially see this godlike power to choose? If we are protected from the consequences of our choices without feedbacks, we will merely pursue the objects of our prejudice. We will not discover what is God's will. The Zulu tribe in Africa describes humanness with the term Buntu. It means that man is self-defining value, but this self-definition, this choice, does not occur in a vacuum. It occurs in the context of the nature and society. It is natural and good that we are not free to the consequences of our choices. God, in his mercy, gives us the feedback we need in order to choose well. To the Christian, we are both individuals with rights endowed by the Creator and members of society, where society is understood as including government, but as being more than government. Society includes family, economic, church, civic institutions, and government itself is seen as consisting of both local and national components. Properly understood, the Christian position is that it should be for us, privately, using the advantages that are rightfully ours, to try to encourage moral behavior in others. It is not for us, through the coercive powers of government, to try to legislate morality. This is such an important point, and let me refer to a Bible verse, 2 Thessalonians, Paul writes, "For we hear there are some which walk among you disorderly, working not at all, but are busybodies. Now them that are such we command and exhort by our Lord Jesus Christ, that with quietness they work and eat their own bread. But ye, brethren, be not weary in well-doing, and if any man obey not our word by this epistle, note that man, and have no company with him, that he may be ashamed. Yet count him not as an enemy, but admonish him as a brother. It is with loving kindness, not coercive force, that we are to uphold each other. And what is the person who will not accept great admonition? For this person we are to bear in mind the story of the prodigal son. Everybody knows that this parable teaches us joyfully accept the repentant sinner, but it also teaches us to trust God for the salvation of those whom we love or who reject our good counsel. The father who celebrated his son's return is the same father who waited patiently for that return." Boy, this guy is really doing well here as far as I'm concerned on the whole morality issue. Now, someone might disagree. We'd like you to call and disagree. We would like to have some conversation about that. Or even if you want to just agree with them, that's fine too. 864-244-9904 or 864-244-8177 or 864-201-6955 are the phone numbers. Best one is the 244-9904 number. He continues, and I suspect that there are some who question whether or not it was fair for the father to accept back the prodigal son and whether his own son had remained faithful, when his other son had remained faithful. Let me tell you the rest of the story. When the faithful son brought the question of fairness to his father's attention, the father told him not to worry, that the father knew the prodigal son had already spent his inheritance, that other's father's wealth would still be the faithful son. This story is not only demonstrates that we are joyfully to accept the repentant sinner and that we are to trust in God for the salvation of those who are wayward. It demonstrates that God is just as well as merciful. That's right. The other son didn't have to give up his inheritance. During the past 100 years of communism, during the past 100 years, the idea of communism has corrupted the church. Pietist Christians have come to preach a social gospel of government intervention, a political platform that incorporates a lot of the Marxist doctrine. In our own country, Woodrow Wilson is a good example of a pietist Christian who thought that the enlightened government could usher in God's kingdom on earth. In the late 19th century, the church tried unsuccessfully to distinguish a Christian society from both classical liberalism and communism. Communism was wrong, and on this everybody today agrees, but because it denies the personhood of the individual and because it deifies the state. Classical liberalism supposedly was also wrong because it deified the individual and made freedom an end into itself. Because it failed to sufficiently emphasize personal responsibility, because it ignored the need for community. Pope Leo XIII and his encyclical Libertas in 1887 and Returned to Novarum in 1891 attacked classical liberalism both as a social philosophy and as an economic system. Yet the attack on classical liberalism was an attack on distorted variation of it. It was an attack on the straw man. I've read Adam Smith, Lord Acton, John Stuart Mill, and other classical liberals, and they all embraced elements which we would recognize to be a Christian society. Yes, they, like Pope Leo, recognized the advantages of the private property, free enterprise system, but they were not advocates of greed and selfishness or social Darwinism. They were advocates of a healthy mix of competition, cooperation, and compassion in society. In the writings of the classical liberals, you will find discussion of the family and of the fraternal and charitable institutions that characterize a free society. The classical liberals, just like Pope Leo, thought that economicus, or economic man, was a ludicrous concept, and that greed is not enough to organize society. Jesus says, "Is it not lawful, that is, in accordance with the Torah, for me to do what I will with my own?" Certainly it is, and just as certainly, Jesus wants us to do good with what is ours. Freedom is not an end in itself; freedom is a means to good. Within the last generation, the church has reconsidered the positions it formerly expressed concerning classical liberalism. In its encyclical Humane Vita, 1963, Pope John XXIII took that first step, giant step, and finally put the Catholic Church on record as favoring religious freedom. For those of you who are in church history, this completed the Reformation. Well, I don't think so. Well, folks, I mean, there's another error here. Maybe this fellow's a Catholic. But the Catholic Church is not a Christian church. Let me just skip ahead here to the end of his article so we can be done here. In 1985, the Libertarian Party National Convention was held in Philadelphia. For a memento of that convention, I brought a small bronze replica of the Liberty Bell to give to my daughter, Adele. As you probably know, the Liberty Bell is inscribed with the Bible verse, "Proclaim liberty throughout the land and unto all the inhabitants thereof." This little Liberty Bell must have worked in Adele's mind. Sometime after I gave it to her, she said to me, "Daddy, you know why the Liberty Bell has a crack in it?" "Why does it have a crack?" I replied. "Because America isn't truly free," she said. "When America is truly free, God will make a miracle and fix the Liberty Bell. We who are engaged in the work of making America truly free would enjoy the miracle of the Liberty Bell, but the real miracle will occur when Americans embrace the true meaning of freedom." As Laura Ingalls of the Little House on the Prairie, I realized 1/4 of July, working with her mother to prepare for family picnic, freedom means you have to make yourself be good. And that is a great way to end that. And we agree with much of what he said here. I think, must a Christian be a libertarian? Well, I think if he's going to be consistent, I think he will be. And I think even people in the Constitution Party are libertarians at heart, with a few appendages added on there that make some small distinctions between them and libertarians. I think even many Republicans are. They're just making some errant moves by actually supporting the Republican Party. And you are listening to Christian Worldview with Dr. John Coben, a little bit overdue for a break, so we'll take that now. We'll be back in just a minute.
If you have a question or comment for the show, please dial 864-244-9904, 864-244-8177, or 864-201-6955. Calls are received 7:30 a.m. to 9 o'clock a.m. weekday mornings. If you are listening at any other time, you are listening to a recording. You may also email your questions or comments to questions@policyofliberty.net.
This is Dr. John Coben. Visit policyofliberty.net, that's www.policyofliberty.net on the web. You'll find there books and articles written by Dr. John Coben, that's me, the Tyranny Response Unit, regarding things related to covenant marriage, allodial land titles, and free market economics. You'll also find there portraits of famous economists, including their biographical information and links to their famous works, as well as many, many quotations for liberty. Visit policyofliberty.net on the web today and find a wealth of information to help advancement of the truth.
I am for doing good to the poor, but I differ in the opinions of the means. I think the best way of doing good to the poor is not making them easy in poverty, but leading them or driving them out of it. Benjamin Franklin.
Hi, this is Dr. John Coben. Is it okay for a Christian to become wealthy? Did you know that 8 out of 10 Americans will face retirement with little or no savings, even Americans who had good incomes? At Integrity Group, we are dedicated to providing personalized service, finding effective ways to protect and increase your hard-earned money. Integrity Group is an independent financial planning firm that offers a wide range of services. We specialize in finding creative, custom solutions to meet the needs of each individual. Do you have concerns about providing for your retirement? Do you want to ensure that catastrophes like disability or long-term care will not wipe out your savings? Do you need to have your assets protected from creditors? Do you want tax-advantaged growth of your savings? At Integrity Group, we recognize that time passes all too quickly. Sound financial planning is not something to be delayed. Our offices are located at 514 Pettigrew Street in downtown Greenville. Make an appointment with Integrity Group today at 864-244-6464. That's 864-244-6464.
You're listening to the Tyranny Response Network, sensible radio that knows that open rebuke is better than love carefully concealed. It's time for your next shock treatment.
And we welcome you back to Christian Worldview this 28th day of October 2005. I want to remind you that there is the Fundamental Rights Petition also, which can be found under the Related Media tab on the tyrannyresponse.com website. Go down there and take 30 seconds out of your day-to-day to sign that petition. You'll be glad that you did. Promote private property here in South Carolina as well as in America. It's a Fundamental Rights Petition to save your private property. A petition on the tyrannyresponse.com website. Now, some of you may be still working your way out making your way out to work, so we want to check the weather for you.
Now in Greenville-Spartanburg, it's 43 degrees, downtown 44 degrees, Anderson 41 degrees, Clemson 40 degrees. Today, partly cloudy this morning, then clearing, highs in the lower 60s, northeast winds 5 to 10 miles per hour, and there's also a frost advisory in effect for tonight. And here is a quote from Thomas Jefferson. The tree of liberty must be refreshed from time to time with the blood of patriots and tyrants.
Yes, it's one of our favorite quotes, that's for sure. We do enjoy that quotation. And we've read most of the show today has been talking about this Clifford Theus article, Must a Christian Be a Libertarian? It was a good first hour talking about that and some nuances and some theological abstractions based on that, and we're glad we've been able to do that. There are other people out there also doing important work in the field. Want to mention, of course, my own book, which will be coming out. My current book is Bible and Government, Public Policy from a Christian Perspective, and that's available at the policyofliberty.net website. I also have a new book that will probably be coming out in the first part of next year. It's called The Christian Theology of Public Policy, Highlighting the American Experience. So stay tuned for that. That should be a good book to get in your hands. We also have our good friend Dr. Stephen Yates here in the Upstate, and he has a book called Worldviews, Christian Theism versus Modern Materialism. This book just came out, and it's cost $20.99 plus $2.50 shipping and handling. and worldviews, Christian theism from versus modern materialism can be obtained for a $2 discount if you're a member of either the Constitution Party or the Libertarian Party. So by all means, when you write in and get it and send your check, make a note if you are a member of either party. All checks should be made payable to the Worldviews Projects, Worldviews Project, and you can send it to the Worldviews Project, care of Dr. Yates, at 3500 Pelham Road, Suite 216 in Greenville. That's 29615. That's the Worldviews Project, care of Dr. Yates, 3500 Pelham Road, Suites 216 in Greenville, South Carolina, 29615. All right, well, let's go back. Here's an email that someone sent, actually, might have been yesterday because my email is down, so I'm just getting to it now. And he says the following. This is a listener named Jim. He says, in case you did not come across it yet, here is perhaps a sampling of what you will get in the lecture from the CFR guys. That's the Council of Foreign Relations guy, minus the dopey ingratiating remarks to the Italian audience. Okay, this is his Costa Lecture 2005. However, the lecture does not actually work. Unfortunately, the link he sent me is broken, so I wasn't able to look at it, but sorry about that, Jim. It looks like this guy's weak spot will be, not surprisingly, national independence and a total lack of explanation of how global bureaucracy is managing world trade and gender free trade environment. Here is a 3-second soundbite smackdown question I would ask him if I were in the audience and was not silenced by having to submit a question on a 3x5 card to be censored by a moderator. How many Austrian school free market economists are you aware of that work in the WTO? The secondary objective in attending the lecture would be to let the CFR know that the John Birch Society is alive and well and not taking things lying down. The primary objective is to see if there are any fellow travelers we can pick up at Furman or at the audience. Okay, so apparently I'm missing something here. There is some kind of a meeting going on at Furman, and this guy is going to be there talking about it. And this must be from none other than Jim Capo, since he mentions John Birch, the John Birch Society. Jim Capo from Charlotte, who's the coordinator for the area, whom I know. And he's simply asking, how many Austrian school free market economists are you aware of that work at the WTO? None, because Austrian school free market economists don't believe that their government or the state should have anything to do with proactive policies of interventionism. And because of that, they're not going to work for something that's immoral and wrong, as far as I know, unless they're not truly an Austrian. Now, I know that Alan Greenspan professed to be a follower of Ayn Rand or Ayn Rand for a while and also liked the Austrian school people. But when you go and work for one of the most evil institutions in the world, the Federal Reserve System, how can you truly be, you know, an Austrian? I don't think so. It doesn't work that way. So that's the answer to my question. That's my answer to your question, Jim. So I don't, and I'm not sure if I can give you a better one than that. If you know of others that are there that are fellow travelers, let me know. I'd be interested in hearing about it. Okay. Well, anyway, let's go back to a couple other stories that were sent in through libertarianchristians.org today. We're going back and back through a lot of articles on the show today, folks, mainly because the Tyranny Response Network research staff is not able to get through to me today because email's down. And not only that, but our email service usually picks up other interesting things, tidbits from other places, and we're not able to get to any of that either. So we have a backlog of a few articles we're going over. I'm glad actually we had a day to do that because it's certainly helpful. Here's one off of lewrockwell.com. The State Anti-Insurers by Michael S. Rosiff. Most everybody wants security. We don't want to die from bird flu or West Nile virus. We don't want to run out of money in old age. We don't want to eat bad food or take a bad drug. We don't want to lose our jobs, be attacked by a robber, or get flooded out, lose eyesight or a limb, or be blown up by a bomb. We do not want dangers. They pose risks of losses. We like to reduce them, eliminate them if we can. There are hundreds of perils, and the state promises to get rid of them all for us. The Constitution has as one goal to ensure domestic tranquility. Does the state do this? Michael Leavitt, the Secretary of the United States Department of Health and Human Services, says we are not prepared for a bird flu pandemic. Critics say that the federal government is years behind the curve, that Bush spent more money on abstinence education than on getting flu vaccine, the state anti-insurers. Under the state, security falls. We are not ready for bird flu because there are only 4 companies who make flu vaccine, down from 26 in 1957. We can make vaccines, but we don't. The Food and Drug Administration has seen to that. To get a vaccine approved by these foot-dragging safety hawks runs the costs up too high. The state's idea of safety is disconnected from our ideas of safety. To the FDA, the safest vaccine is none. Then no one will ever incur the small chance of coming down with the flu after being vaccinated. Then no FDA bureaucrat will feel the heat. To those of us who value our lives, we'll accept one chance in a trillion or a billion or a million or even one chance in a thousand. We each value safety, and it's worth it to us personally. The state values safety by the criteria of its bureaucrats who make up the rules. The state anti-insurers. Lawsuits scare off vaccine firms, and the state runs the justice system. The state's Vaccines for Children program buys cut-rate vaccines. Make the price low enough with a single dominant buyer and no one will sell. The state makes sure we do not have enough vaccines. It anti-insures. Would you like to spray mosquitoes with DDT to prevent West Nile virus? It's effective and safe. People in countries facing rampant malaria and other diseases could benefit from DDT. Many states say no, you can't use it. They anti-insure. The answer is simple, even a solution is not. Get rid of the anti-insurer. Get rid of the FDA. Its modern form began in 1906, and that means we can live without it for as our great-grandfathers did. We do not need their edicts, decrees, fiats, commands, or rulers. We can decide for ourselves by word of mouth, by vendor reputation, by what doctors say or aided, if we wish, by private companies that provide testing, certification, risk assessments, recommendations, labeling, and other services like the FDA supposedly gives us. The ups and downs of business causes risks. Employers can lose their jobs, businesses can lose money, investors can lose wealth. Changes in the price levels pose risks to investors, too. One of the state's answers is the Fed, begun in 1913. The Federal Reserve System has missions of stable economy, a stable price level, and full employment. Actually, it creates economic instability, inflation, and fluctuating employment levels. The Fed anti-insures. The act that originated the Fed called for them to furnish an elastic currency. Instead of adjusting it up and down to keep its shape, the adjustment was one way, loss of value. No Fed simply using gold as money would have been better. The act sought to establish more effective supervision of the banking in the United States. Depositors had seen to that before the Fed. The Fed anti-insured this nicely. It helped thousands of banks fail in 1930 to 1932. As with the FDA, the answer is simple. Get rid of the Fed. Its check clearing services can be privatized. Whatever certification of bank risk it does can be done by private companies. We do not need to create money. There are plenty of firms eager to do that. Every war brings heartbreaking loss. The United States was formed in part to avoid the calamity of war, but practically the opposite of every aim of the Constitution's preamble is becoming a reality by 1860, when the North and South fought. The more perfect union fell apart and justice went away. Tranquility disappeared. The common defense became invasion of one side by the other. The securing of blessings of liberty to ourselves and our posterity became the trend toward the all-powerful state. The Constitution became the anti-Constitution. The state did its job as anti-insurer. The United States Department of Defense in 1947 started out as a War Department in 1789. Defense became an offense and expansion before too long. From 1914 onwards, the United States has fought one war after another, mostly on foreign soil. The Department of Defense proudly proclaims that it is America's oldest company, largest company, busiest company, and most successful company. Our rulers have been helped by starting out provoking wars. Defense has become offense. The Bush Doctrine is the apotheosis of anti-peace, anti-security, and anti-safety. The state anti-insurers. The answer to these evils goes way beyond replacing Bush. The answer is to get rid of the Department of Defense, downsize, and then downsize it even more. If it is doing anything worthwhile, breaking it up into pieces and privatize it. The ultimate goal should be free market defense. Okay, this is a great article, and I'm going to read some more of it, but we're going to take a quick break, and we'll be back for our last segment in just a minute.
If you have a question or comment for the show, please dial 864-244-9904, 864-244-8177, or 864-201-6955. Calls are received 7:30 a.m. to 9 o'clock a.m., weekday mornings. If you are listening at any other time, you are listening to a recording. You may also email your questions or comments to questions@policyofliberty.net.
Hello, this is Dr. John Coben. Get a copy of Bible and Government, Public Policy from a Christian Perspective, my latest book. You can buy it online from Alertness Books. The link is at the top of policyofliberty.net. That's www.policyofliberty.net. It's only $11, and it will help you think about the Christian's relationship to public policy and the nature of the state. Be sure to get a copy today of Bible and Government, Public Policy from a Christian Perspective.
Hi, this is Dr. John Coben. Is it okay for a Christian to become wealthy? Did you know that 8 out of 10 Americans will face retirement with little or no savings, even Americans who had good incomes? At Integrity Group, we are dedicated to providing personalized service, finding effective ways to protect and increase your hard-earned money. Integrity Group is an independent financial planning firm that offers a wide range of services. We specialize in finding creative, custom solutions to meet the needs of each individual. Do you have concerns about providing for your retirement? Do you want to ensure that catastrophes like disability or long-term care will not wipe out your savings? Do you need to have your assets protected from creditors? Do you want tax-advantaged growth of your savings? At Integrity Group, we recognize that time passes all too quickly. Sound financial planning is not something to be delayed. Our offices are located at 514 Pettigrew Street in downtown Greenville. Make an appointment with Integrity Group today at 864-244-6464. That's 864-244-6464.
That we are here to stand by the president, right or wrong, is not only unpatriotic and servile, but is morally treasonable to the American public. Theodore Roosevelt.
Warning: Dr. Coben's show is not recommended for anyone with an aversion to deep thinking and critical analysis.
And we welcome you back to Christian Worldview with Dr. John Coben. Glad you've joined us today. This is one of those deep thinking days. Of course, that's frequently the case here on the Tyranny Response Network and on Christian Worldview with Dr. John Coben. We often like to stimulate thinking by reading important, provocative articles. And today we are picking up a lot of the stuff that was sent to us by Brian Morton up at libertarianchristians.org. We're here currently reading this article by Rosef about the anti-insurer, the state anti-insurers. And he continues on and says, FEMA anti-insurers emergencies, the U.S. Department of Education anti-insurers education, the Department of Energy anti-insurers as an efficient production of energy, the state anti-insurers. Bye-bye to these agencies and the rest of them. Freedom is the founding value. The president talks about freedom a great deal, saying the defense of freedom is worth our sacrifice. We do know the love of freedom is the mightiest force in history. Freedom typically brings with it free markets. State laws do the opposite. The state anti-insures freedom and free markets by existing. Every law enforced with violence, as it must be, disrupts many a person's ability to plan his life and future freely. This directly causes losses. Lawmaking increases the risk of loss. Lawmaking reduces security. Laws are anti-insure freedom. Well, at least, I mean, not, we don't believe that about God's law, but we do believe that about state's legislation. Then, too, the state changes laws frequently and capriciously. This upsets plans and reduces security. The state's taxes prevent individuals from spending on their own. They are unable to buy the security they want. Taxes are anti-insurer security. Whoever said, "No man's life, liberty, and property are safe while the legislature is in session," was a wise man. I say, no man's life, liberty, or property are safe while the state exists. The state anti-insurers. Answer, get rid of the state. And Michael S. Rosef is the Lewis M. Jacobs Professor of Finance at the University of Buffalo. Good, good article. We don't like the state here either. We are anti-state. Limited government is okay. Very limited government, but not states. All right, let's move on to another article so we can try to finish these on our show today if we can. Here's one on LouRockville.com called More Imperial Stumbles by Bill Bonner. There is hardly an error chronicled in any history of empirical wars that American forces have not committed in Iraq. I am still Iraq's president, said Mr. Hussein. What he does not seem to realize is that American conquistadors are running the show. They've accused the former president of various crimes, but even after years in jail, Saddam refuses to squirm. Indeed, he threatens to put the empire itself in the dock. What gives this court the authority to try me, he asks? Good question. the only force of all, only a force of U.S. arms, that is to say, only the brute power of an invading army. I am the only lawful president of Iraq, he continues. I'm not a puppet put in by the Americans. Again, he has a point. He stole the job fair and square. How do you pass judgment on me, he goes on. And there we have another, and we have an answer. It's merely the latest in a long chain of blunders. One of the pleasures and benefits of being the world's superpower is you get to cut off the heads of your enemies, and you never had to say you're sorry. Tamerlane was a master at it. He cut off so many heads, his men spent days in piling them up into huge pyramids, thousands of them. Caesar, Genghis Khan, Adolf Hitler, Stalin, all great conquerors, make a point of punishing those who stood against them. But the trial of Saddam Hussein is a first. It is the first time a leader of a conquered nation has gone on television so that he may rally his people against the invader. Once again, history's most incompetent empire is a victim of its own humbug. We quote ourselves above not out of vanity, but only to make a correction. We would like to explain that U.S. actions in Iraq are not a terror, are not an error from a historical perspective. They are a necessity. Every great empire must extinguish itself somehow. Otherwise, we would be ruled by Assyrians or Mongols. What Anglo-American forces are doing is merely from suicidal statecraft. Suggests Zbigniew Brzezinski that it is a way of cutting off our own heads. Readers have not asked for our opinion on the subject, but we may give it anyway. Like almost all great public spectacles, the war against Iraq was commenced on a fraud, played out as a farce, and now threatens to end in abject tragedy, just as it should. There is no way to a partisan remark. This is in no way a partisan remark. No, it's merely an observation. Empires can rarely resist the temptation of war, of fighting a war. If they think they can get away with something, George W. Bush saw an increase in his poll ratings coming from people's love to a war president, at least till they would live through a real war. He could hardly wait for an opportunity to put off a flight suit and land on a real U.S. Navy aircraft carrier, ostensibly to rally the troops, but more importantly to rally the lumpen public. But once Saddam's sorry troops were routed, neither the president nor his military men knew what to do next. They had guns and tanks and the most expensive weaponry money could buy. They had no clue what to do with them. When American forces took Naples in 1943, General Mark Clark appointed New York mafioso Lucky Luciano and his senior civilian advisor. While Clark dined on fish looted from the city aquarium, Luciano knew what to do with anyone who got out of line. But Paul Bremers and the rest of the bumblers appointed by the Bush administration were only good at pleasing their masters in Washington, not at ruling their subjects. They quickly made a mess of it, and now by putting Saddam on the stand, they are offering the old man a chance to make his case. Yes, this nation was a hellhole when he ran the place, but at least it was a hellhole for the Iraqi people, by the Iraqi people, and of the Iraqi people. The noose is too good for Saddam. U.S. soldiers might have done better to treat him as Genghis treated one of his enemies, pouring molten silver in his ear. Then at least he would not have not be on television, pointing out the obvious to his compatriots. He is only on trial because the country was overrun by foreign troops. Best way to win a war, said Sun Tzu, is to let your enemy defeat himself. Among the charges against Saddam is that he killed more than 140 men and teenage boys in Dujail. His defense will be that the people in Dujail tried to kill him, which of course they did. He might petition that on every British leader does that same. The real problem for America is the problem of the empire itself. It turns the imperial people into a race of hollow dummies, to use Orwell's phrase. The reason for these errors can be traced to the lack of judgment, to an excess of vanity, and that is indeed what we find out with what's going on here in America. It's a good article. Appreciate Bonner's insights here into the imperial stumbles of the day. Well, here's a final article for the day, I believe. Stop the Competition. And this is by Mark Brennan, and he's writing also on LouRockwell.com. He says, the first principles of free market economics is the idea of competition. For those who have any trouble believing this axiom, here is a simple experiment. Go to a baseball game at Yankee Stadium on a hot summer day And after getting to your seat and baking in the sun for several hours, cool yourself off by purchasing a beer from one of those roving vendors. Oh, wait, I forgot to add that before you leave your house, round up all your cash, credit cards, and checks because you will need them to finance your purchase. After buying your beer, enjoy its cooling effect while you steam at the price you just willingly paid to the Monopoly vendor who works at that the house that Ruth built. It is underwritten by the taxpayers of New York City, New York State, and the federal government. That is you. Next, get on a plane and fly to Rio de Janeiro. Once you arrive in Rio, proceed directly to Maracana Stadium. Bake in the sun for several hours while watching a soccer game, and then buy the same beer. Don't worry about exchanging your American pesos for Brazilian reais. Worthless paper is worthless paper, and Brazilians are not finicky when accepting your play money for their own. But right before purchasing your beer from the Carioca beer vendor, call over another beer vendor and ask him if he can beat his competitor's price. This will immediately start a price competition, which even after including your airfare and hotel costs, you will still spend less for that overpriced beer than you grudgingly purchased and angrily drank while Steinbrenner laughed at you from his taxpayer-funded luxury box. Needless to say, competition works, and only those who are ideologically opposed to competition oppresses the poor and working people and is the tool of capitalist overclass. Illogical competition oppresses the poor and working people and is a tool of capitalist overclass. Did I repeat myself? Or inane. If we have unregulated competition, then there will be more beer and vendors than spectators. You will find this basic law. However, even though I like to think I don't fall into either of the last two categories, you are free to disagree. Thursday night, the U.S. Senate may have disapproved the action when it voted 93-1 to ban the IRS from developing software to help taxpayers file their returns. It appears that lobbyists for Intuit, the tax preparation software producer, have saved us from all competition that ultimately would have done each American taxpayer grave economic harm. In this case, competition under the guise of IRS software development department would have made the DMV look like the benchmark of efficiency. Imagine First Action framing a no-bid contract to Halliburton for, well, I'm not sure what purpose Halliburton would serve in this case, but just to conservatively assume that Halliburton does in fact get a no-bid contract, perhaps to provide the necessary security for the IRS new research and development facility. Well, this is a comical article, to say the least. Let me skip down towards the end here so we can at least finish this some of this article before the show ends. Senator George Allen of Virginia opined that the vote was a great victory for the free market. He added the IRS should not be impeding competition from private sector innovators, and that in order for private enterprises to flourish and provide jobs, entrepreneurs need to know the government won't step in to compete against a product that's already in the marketplace. Reading those quotes might almost lead one to believe that these two senators think coherently. However, my cynicism leads me to think that more likely the case that they are both on the first-name basis with Intuit lobbyists. The worst headache I ever had was in May 1988 as I was walking out of New York State Certified Public Accounting Exam after completing the tax section. The tax preparation question was so convoluted that rumor had it that no test takers got the same answer, let alone the correct one. Despite passing the exam, I have had an annual recurrences of those headaches, strangely enough, always around mid-April. I have found the only relief is to visit my tax preparer and hand him a box full of tax receipts. Although I pay him a multiple of the retail price of Intuit's tax preparation software, it's a choice I freely make. If Intuit starts selling its software at Marcania anytime soon, I may consider switching, but I will give him an opportunity to lower his price. An interesting article. Appreciate that from Mark Brennan, sending that off, or getting that from Libertarian Christians today. Good show today, lots of deep thinking, and thanks for listening to Christian Worldview with Dr. John Coben. Look forward to seeing you back here again on Monday morning. If you can make the League of the South meeting at 10 o'clock tomorrow morning in Columbia, go to their website, get directions, and I'll see you down there. And if you can make our Tyranny Response Network informal meeting at the China Walk Buffet on Pelham Road this afternoon at 1:30 or 1:45 till 4, any time in that range, maybe I'll see you there as well. At any rate, until Monday morning, God bless you.
Thank you. Thank you for joining us today on Christian Worldview with Dr. John Coben. We hope you will be with us at 7:30 Monday morning right here on TRN, the Tyranny Response Network, for another installment of Christian Worldview.